Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back. It's Tuesday. The cats have stopped fighting.
They've just separated.
Yeah. And
Ate a Chase pie back downstairs.
Hopefully things can, you know, chill the hell out for a little bit. But yeah, we're back with another episode. Yesterday we left off with Shai Hulud rising out of the sands after chasing Paul and Jessica across the open desert. And today we're starting with Shai Hulud continuing to rise out of the sands. Yeah. It was one of those very few minutes in the movie where we're stopping in the mid, like in the direct middle of some action.
Yeah.
It finishes rising and then just kind of is looking down on Paul and Jessica, which, I mean, they can't shit their pants because they have tubes in their asses, but
they can shit their thigh pads.
They can shit their thigh pads. And man, I would be shitting my thigh pads.
John, this is a very large anus that they're staring down the barrel of.
Yep. Yep. And it's pulsating.
Oh.
I want to talk about this.
Yeah, you always do. You always want to talk about anuses, dude.
No, I want to talk about Shai Hulud.
Okay.
So yesterday I kind of dropped a little bit of a teaser at the end of the episode for some things I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
First thing, the scales.
Yeah.
So yesterday we talked about how it was kind of a shame that this was shot at night and everything. A little sad, a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
You said that they used it to hide some of the CG stuff, but because you have a copy of the Blu-ray as well, and I'm so glad we have the Blu-ray.
Yes.
To be able to see like all the super high detail stuff and everything in the movie. Did you look at any of the extras for the movie?
No, I have not. Okay.
So in the extras for the movie, we're not referencing Art and Soul today.
Mm-hmm.
I know, a real disappointment to all of our listeners. We have a whole section in the movie extras where they're talking about creating Shai Hulud and all of the important goals that they had for it.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing was its physical appearance, specifically around the scales, because they wanted it to look ancient and prehistoric, not unlike, you know, there's a very famous dinosaur that was excavated that was basically complete. And it was one of those dinosaurs that I don't know what type it is. And I meant to look it up this morning, but got distracted with other things. But it's one of those ones with like almost like a turtle like back where it's just completely scaly and everything. That was, they didn't mention that directly in the film, but you can definitely see they took a lot of inspiration from that.
Okay.
I gotta look this up. Hold on. Yeah, so it's the Ankylosaurus, or something related to an Ankylosaurus that was discovered, which has like a, like I said, it looks like a early turtle.
Yeah.
Kind of. But they wanted these scales to be just like absolutely massive and huge, but also worn because Shai Hulud lives for hundreds of years, if not longer. And sand is not gentle. It's rough, it's coarse, and it gets everywhere.
You beat me. Damn it.
I saw you fucking just like ramping up for it. And I needed to. But yeah, they wanted it to look just super tough and everything. So the scales actually went through a lot. And then this, they show the model that they actually use in this without the textures. So you see like the actual 3D modeling and everything down to super high detail. And it is incredibly detailed. So I don't think it was a matter of them like trying to hide CG qualities or anything like that.
All right, good. That's good to know.
Shot at night.
Yeah.
Because like we talked about last week, they had to do all their shooting either very early in the morning or very late at night because otherwise Saudi Arabia was hot as fuck.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I guess that comment was more from a place of like, if you know that your CG is going to be lacking,
yeah,
you tend to hide stuff at night, which is why, Jurassic Park holds up so well, because Spielberg hid his bad graphics at night. Whereas
I don't know, some of the CG from the day though looked really fucking good. So
contrast that to Star Wars.
Yes. Okay.
Where the harsh light makes computer graphics look shit.
Yeah. You mean Watto doesn't look fantastic?
We will not speak of him.
Personally, I'm more of a Sebulba fan myself.
Well, of course.
Yeah. He's just a fucking badass.
I'm a Ben Quadernero fan myself.
Shout out to the Star Wars Minute.
Yeah, exactly. they talk at length on Ben Quadernero.
But then, yeah, the movie then goes on to talk about sound design. Mm-hmm. The extras talk about it, but I want to go back to the movie and what happens in the movie, and then we can kind of talk sound design and everything. So Shai Hulud is just kind of there silently, like hovering for a little bit, looking. And this is the first time we see in detail, because it's the first time that Shai Hulud's mouth isn't also like absorbing a shitload of sand. Mm-hmm. But we see the detail of all of the baleen teeth that it has and all of the inner machinations of Shai Hulud and its weird Y-shaped throat. And
it's very odd. But why would we expect anything of this creature to look normal?
Yeah, it's a giant sandworm, right? But the baleen teeth and everything talked about being inspired by whales.
Yeah.
That is another thing. Shai Hulud filter feeds. And how do you filter feed with those baleen teeth?
Yep.
So,
future Chris Knives.
Yes. And, you know, I think when we first talked about the Chris Knife, we had we had kind of brought up, okay, is the knife a fragment of a larger tooth or is it a smaller tooth? And we see very small teeth around the edge of Shai Hulud's mouth.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So I would assume it's one of those smaller teeth at that point. So
I think that's we'll call it confirmed.
So then we get to hear like the creaking and groaning sounds that Shai Hulud makes, and then we see its Y-shaped throat do this weird like pulsating kind of
thing,
and it's got a very guttural almost laugh to it.
Yeah. I was trying to think of things that are like analogies, like where I can draw similarities to like creatures that we have on Earth here.
You can't really.
It was hard. I mean, yeah, and I don't have any good examples, but like frogs do this. Frogs and toads, they vibrate their throat in a way that it makes those croaking sounds.
Sure.
This is more like I said clicking sounds.
Yep. More of like a, you know how there's some of the monkeys that do like the, not howler monkeys, but they have like pouches in their throats that they can like expand and do like a kind of sound.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's I think closer.
Probably. Yeah. But it's great. It's really, really good like creature design. Here.
Yeah, so Shai Hulud is making this. When I first saw the movie in theaters, it almost kind of sounded like a laugh to me.
Okay.
Like it was taunting Paul. But I'm going to go back to the special features here. There's a section where two of the sound designers, a guy named Mark Mangini and another guy named Theo Green, we're talking about a lot of the effort and work that they put into creating the sounds of Shai Hulud. Mm-hmm. And they had direction from Denis that this was not really a moment of action or anything like that, but this is almost like a moment of reverence. And it's almost like a meeting with God.
Sure.
So they wanted to avoid the stereotypical like Godzilla scream, you know, in this kind of moment.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, put together some ideas for what Shai Hulud would sound like. So they talk about they had sound effects for the stretching of the skin and the opening and the closing of the mouth. They had sound effects for the teeth rattling against each other and everything. And then this throat sound is one that they say it, they call it the voice of Shai Hulud, and they go on to imply that the thumper sound is meant to replicate the sounds that Shai Hulud makes.
Yeah.
And then the thumpers were reverse engineered in order to attract it. I don't know if that's necessarily correct, because Shai Hulud is also described as just an extremely territorial creature.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that Shai Hulud would want to attack anything regardless of whether or not it is another worm. But I guess the way to get the most...
It makes it effective.
Attention,
yeah,
is to replicate the sounds of another worm.
And that's something that I thought when I was making my notes. I was like, this sounds like a thumper.
Heart and Soul has nothing in this. On this section, by the way, which I thought was very interesting.
They have a lot of the initial design of the worm on there, but not this particular section.
Art and Soul has some weird early concepts for the worm where there's like a proboscis that it has and like an extending mouth beyond its body that looks very
alien-esque.
Phallic.
Oh, sure.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm glad that they went with the design that they actually went with. Yeah. But
I think it's there's a clear line from the sound that we hear here to the thumpers.
Yeah.
That's even without knowing that what you just described. Like, I thought that last night when I was writing these notes.
Yeah. Shai Hulud's sounds are a bit more rapid though than a thumper's.
Sure.
And we hear this because, you know, in this immediately after Paul's moment with Shai Hulud, the silence is broken by the sounds of a thumper off in the distance. And
how do we know that it's a thumper?
Well, Paul tells us, Mr. Captain Obvious himself, it's a thumper. Someone set off a thumper.
Yep.
But it also does have the characteristic sound that we heard.
I'm just so glad that even in the face of death, Paul can find the time to give us exposition.
Yeah. And the moment is broken up. Shai Hulud slowly turns away from Paul and makes its own thumping noises as it begins to, you know, have a moment of light worm sign.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, quote, light worm sign as it thuds hard into the fucking sand. Almost like an explosive sound or whatever.
I like how they portrayed the worm like diving back underneath the sand, because it's not just, you know, face down into sand.
No, it kind of glides the surface and then slowly.
Yeah. And we see like one of its, one of like the bottom, I'm going to call them lips here or whatever, like the bottom opening of the mouth, like this shovel almost.
Yeah.
Then can start to cut into the sand as it goes. It slips underneath the surface. So really, really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Our minute ends right after the explosive just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of it hitting the ground. So.
Well, how about some
book notes?
Yeah, it's where we're at in the books.
I feel like there's a couple changes between the book and the movie.
Yeah, a little bit. So I mentioned yesterday that Paul and Jessica had acted a lot more rationally in the books. They don't stop 10 feet from the edge of the sand.
Got somewhere a little safer.
Yeah. They climb into this crack in the rocks, and they're squeezed in there to where there's no, the opening's way too small for the worm to even get close to them. Right.
Yep.
So the worm is like moving its mouth along the sand or along the rocks, trying to find them. And it's like, kicking rocks down into their little crack, and it's like falling on them and whatever.
Yeah.
Something that Frank Herbert put in the books or in this part of the books a couple of times is that the smell of cinnamon from the breath of the worm was so intense. Now we
motherfuckers out here doing the cinnamon challenge.
So we in movie land at this point know the relation between the worms and spice.
Yes.
It's been told to us that, the worms make the spice effectively. This is not known in the books at this point. Liet Kynes did hint to a relationship between the worms and the spice, but it's not something that is widely known to outsiders.
Okay.
So Paul is getting this, blasted with cinnamon in his face. And he's like, what is the relationship?
Hey, wait a second.
Yeah, he's like, what is the relationship here? There's gotta be a connection. And because of it, this is such a like spice rich environment, we actually get another like moment of prescience from Paul mm-hmm. right now. So it kicked off that effect again. It's a little bit of a long one, but I think it's really cool. So I'm going to read just like this little book passage here.
Sure.
So here we go. Paul felt a kind of elation. In some recent instant, he had crossed a time barrier into a more unknown territory. He could sense the darkness ahead, nothing revealed to his inner eye. It was as though some step he had taken had plunged him into a well or into the trough of a wave where the future was invisible. The landscape had undergone the landscape. I'm a smart person, right? Jesus, I can read. The landscape had undergone a profound shifting. Instead of frightening him, the sensation of time darkness forced a hyperacceleration of his other senses. He found himself registering every available aspect of the thing that lifted from the sand and there seeking him. Its mouth was some 80 meters in diameter.
Oh, fuck.
Crystal teeth with the curved shape of kris knives glinting around the rim. The bellows breath of cinnamon, subtle aldehydes, and acids. Okay, end of reading. 80 meters wide.
Yeah, that's a big bitch.
That's a huge anus.
And yet, that's still not as fat as your mom.
Got him. My mom's a lovely woman.
Yeah,
she you've is met her. Yeah, and so that's when he gets this thought is like there has to be a connection between the worms and the spice. There has to be. But just like the movies, this moment is interrupted by a thumper going off in the distance. Dum, dum. Book Paul kind of does the same thing, exposition wise.
It's a thumper.
Yeah.
They set off a thumper.
Yeah, he's not much better in the books, but I'll cut it off right there. I've got some more stuff to talk about. It's more relevant later in the week, but. I gotta say, as much as I do like this movie, and I think they do a really good job, just the book is almost always better in its descriptions of passages like this. I think I understand the decision to not bring in like a prescient moment in the movie right here. That would have detracted from the excitement.
From the weight of Shia LaBeouf being right fucking there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah.
But it was a good moment. For Paul in the books, because the worm is so heavily linked to like just Fremen religion mm-hmm. that this was quite literally, as you said, a religious moment.
Yeah, it's a meeting with God.
Yeah. So cool. Anything else on your side?
Nope, not from me.
Awesome. Let's get back tomorrow and we'll continue talking about where they go from here because the largest creature they've ever seen just slithered off from them. What would you do?
With thunderous fucking impact into the sand. So.
Yeah. All right, cool. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, if you'd like to reach out, we are on Instagram at The Dune Minute. We are on Twitter at Dune Minute. And our email address is duneminute@gmail.com if you'd like to reach out to us that way.
Yep. Don't forget to give the show a rating, share it with your friends, and add a comment if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on iTunes.
Yep.
Awesome.
Cool. We'll see you tomorrow.
See ya.